Accession number 10600, Reel 1.
Mr. John Wainwright, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Wainwright?
Yes, I was born on October 23rd, 1894, at a place about 3.5 miles from the centre of Wigan. And the place is Oral, and the place was Oral Gardens, which was a sort of an old Victorian walled garden. And there was a big house in there, a sort of nursery house where they grew vegetables and an orchard and all that sort of thing. And attached to this, there were two or three cottages. And at the end of that, there was a little bungalow. And it was in this bungalow that I was born. At about 5:15 in the morning, I believe, I was told by my mother.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a colliery way clerk. I mean, to make that quite clear, actually, he was in a small office on the surface of the mine. This was at Worsley-Maines Colliery, near Wigan, quite close to the Wigan town centre. And in this office there was a weighing machine, and the tubs of coal that came up the pit were taken from the cage onto a movable sort of platform and were weighed by my father on behalf of the colliery owners. And on the other side was what was called a check weighman. That was a man, an official appointed with the union to check up on the correct measurements and see that the colliers were getting the correct weights. And that was his job. By the way, he used to walk from Oral Gardens to the colliery, which was about 3 miles at least, probably 3 to 3.5 miles, every morning. And as the pit started winding at 6 o'clock, that would mean that he had to leave around about 5 o'clock in the morning. And winding in those days, a coal winding shift on the day shift, went on until, I think it was about 4 o'clock. So after that, he would have to check up all his sheets and all the weights and tabulate them and so forth for the colliery office. And then he would have to set off and go back home. So I should imagine he wouldn't get back till well after 5 o'clock in the evening, which was certainly a long day.
Your mother didn't work, I presume?
My mother, no, she never worked after she was married. From what she told me, she was actually what was called a four-loom weaver at one of the Wigan mills, Taylor's Mill it was, at the top of Myrie Lane. The mill is still there, but still it's not a cotton mill. And she worked there as a girl and right up to her marriage as a weaver.
How many children were there in the family?
In my family, do you mean? Yes, there were four of us, but I had a little sister who died unfortunately when she was about 8 years of age. I mean, she was out one day, actually watching my elder brother play football on a local football ground, not very far from our house, and she got a terrible drenching, and she finished up with pneumonia. And I think eventually it led to her death, actually. She died some time afterwards.
I had an
elder brother who was 3 years old, 3 years older than I am. Who, as a matter of fact, we had a message yesterday that he died in California, age 96. He would have been 97 in December. So, and then I had a sister. Then that was the next one in the family. She would be about 2 years younger. And then I was the third. And then I had this younger sister who was younger than me. And then the little girl who died. That was all of the family.
Could you give me any idea of what your childhood was like?
Well, I don't know what you mean by what it was like.
Was it a happy childhood?
Oh, yes, I think we were quite happy in a way. I mean, I remember quite a lot. I don't remember much about the Oral Gardens because later on my father moved nearer to the colliery, and eventually we had a house that was probably about half a mile from the colliery. And I would be probably about 2 years of age by this time. And I certainly remember quite a lot about the time, because where we lived, I mean, there were very, very few houses about, although it was only a mile from the town centre to the back of our houses. I mean, there were fields, and on the other side there were fields and a farmhouse, which I often visited much later on. And we could see the colliery, and I can remember seeing my father watching through the front window and watching my father coming in the distance, walking up from the colliery to our home. And I remember that I had one or two little friends round about who lived near to us. And I remember we used to play about when we had our buckets and spades and so forth. And we must have had some imagination, because I remember this friend of mine, Billy Bradshaw, his name was. Billy and I decided we were going to build a canal. In the field behind our house, there was a sort of small brook or a ditch. And we thought it would be a good idea to build a little canal from through the field back to our houses. And we started that. And it's rather interesting, years later, I remember going along to see what we'd done. And we'd gone about 1 yard and cut with our buckets and spades. And that cutting was still showing years after. That was a sort of idea. And we used to play about and so forth. And we had quite a happy time.
What about your education? What was your first school?
Well, I went to school. My mother took me to school when I was 5 years of age. That was the usual thing. As soon as one attained the age of five, off you had to go. That was the law, wasn't it? And I remember my mother taking me, and I wasn't a bit happy at all. I didn't like it at all. I remember I kicked and screamed and claimed that I had all sorts of illnesses. I'd got tummy ache and toothache and headache and everything. And I had to be taken screaming into the school. But after, I soon settled down. And I well remember being in bottom class, which was the baby class. Remember, we got we had a rocking horse there, and I remember we had these blocks, you know, with pictures on, A for apple and B for ball and C for chair and all that sort of thing. So I do remember even in those days, the sort of things that we did. And I remember in the next class, the one time there, remember the teacher had to go out for something, and she left one of the boys to look after the class, a sort of monitor, even although we were only probably 6 years of age, if that. And he had to tell tales. I thought it was rather mean of the teacher to do this. And I remember this boy was booking down on this little slip of paper or slate that he had the names or the initials of the boys. And to my consternation, when the teacher came back and she looked at this slate and saw there was a JW, and apparently this was John Wainwright, apparently. I thought afterwards I'd been very good, at least I thought I had. So I was in trouble for that. I remember that's one of the incidents there. And then eventually we went on moved to the boys' school. There was the infant school and the girls' school and the boys' school. That was at Newtown, St Mark's, Newtown. And I remember we were quite happy at the school. Remember, we always happy. We're always busy doing something. And
what sort of an education was it? Would you say how efficient was it?
Well, I thought it was very, very good. I mean, you got the main three R's, but I mean, we had geography lessons and English lessons and sort of. I remember we had some sort of chemistry lessons, so forth, history, singing, and later on up in the school we used to do painting and so forth. We used to go out in the schoolyard and do exercises, physical exercises. Used to play ball and play football and skipping and so forth. I think it was quite a happy time at school, really. And we've got a very, very good grounding in the essentials anyway. Presumably I must have been pretty good anyway, because for several years I remember I was top of the class. Somewhere I've got a record, one of the reports, because even those days we used to have reports at the end of the year, a written report signed by the teacher and counted down by the headmaster, the number, name and address, number in class, and position in class, you know, after the examinations. Then all the marks of the result of the various examinations, six or eight subjects, and total number of points you got out of the possibles, and then a report from the teacher, you're either good, bad or indifferent. I remember one of mine was, John is a very smart boy, remember that. So I was certainly top of the class, near the top of the class, all the way through the school.
Was there any thought of you going on to any form of further education?
No, I mean, by the time, you see, I think it was only after the 1902 Education Act, you know, that scholarships were awarded. I remember that I was in the top class at school, top, I think, class 7 or X7 as it was, right at the top of the school, only about half a dozen of us, and two of the boys who were really older than I was, and they were studying for this examination for the grammar school. But presumably these boys, the parents were better off than mine were, and I wasn't entered. Rather, in fact, as a matter of fact, instead of going on to school to the school leaving age of 13, I was put in for what we used to call was a labour examination.
Why exactly was that?
What was that? Well, it was some sort of examination, presumably on the probably the 3 hours or something. I remember going down to Wigan to the old, I think with the old All Saints School in Wigan, that was the centre, and all the children from the various schools who were applying for this or entering for the examination went this on a Saturday morning, I remember it was, and we just had to, it was a written examination and an oral examination. And of course I passed that and I left school when I was only 12 and a half, I think.
So that would be in about 1906,
yes. Yes.
And what did you go to do? What job did you take up?
Well, I worked in an office for a short time.
Which office was that?
Went down in King Street in Wigan.
And what sort of work?
Well, it was an accountant and debt, rent and debt collector and that sort of thing. There seemed to be no future in it at all anyway. I wasn't very happy on that. And eventually my father decided I should go down the mine, which I was rather... So I went down the mine. You couldn't go down the mine until actually at the age of 14. So on my 14th birthday, I went down where I started work down the mine. This was the main colliery where my father worked on the
on what the What did you think server. Of that, of having to go down the mine? Because you were a bright lad, as you say.
I don't know. I made up my mind that if I went down the mine, I was going to do something with it. So, I mean, I was going to evening classes right away. Of course, I was attending evening classes before I went down there.
What were the evening classes you were attending?
Well, the evening classes, first for the first year, of course, when I was this sort of office boy, come everything, took commercial subjects, did shorthand, bookkeeping and so on, commercial and arithmetic and that sort of thing. And then I switched over to an engineering course, and then went on to the Mining and Technical College at Wigan for an evening course there.
And what sort of level were they teaching you to in these subjects?
Well, you mean at the Mining College? Well, the Mining College, I joined a Saturday afternoon course. Used to work down the mine till 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, get home and have a quick bath, and change and go down to Wigan for it was either 3 or 3:30, I think it was, till about 7:30 at night, and this was a colliery manager's course. It was a 3 or 4 year course. And I attended that a couple of years before war broke out, I think.
Now, what exactly work were you doing down the mine?
Well, I did all sorts of jobs. First thing, when I first went down the mine, I was working at the bottom of the mine and helping to receive the tubs of coal that were coming up a very sharp incline, a tunnel. And my job was to take off the lashing on chain. That was a chain that was attached from the tubs, train of tubs, to the haulage rope, an endless rope haulage. Had to take these off, and then the tubs went round to the pit bottom and sent up the shaft. That was the sort of thing I was taking off. And that's so. After taking off the coals, taking off the tubs of full coal, then they were empty boxes of tubs were coming back from the shaft to where we were near the shaft. My job was to send the empty tubs of coal down this tunnel to the workings by means of chains, lashing on chains. Used to attach one chain to the front, attach it to the rope which pulled the tubs on, and then you would put on another chain at the back and lash that onto the rope, and that would hold it going down the incline. So that was the job. And then I gradually went down further into the workings, into one of the junctions, and went on to working in the airways, repairing airways, and that sort of thing. I went onto the coal face, and I had all sorts of jobs down there. I think the powers that be, the manager, knew quite well. He knew me, he knew my father, of course, knew, and he knew me by name, and the under manager knew me. And I think they put everything in their way to give me a good chance of good experience of all sorts of things down the mine. I mean, at one stage, this was absolutely something new to my experience. I'd heard about these boring machines that were drilled deep holes to went through the strata, but I'd never come across one. I'd read about them and knew about them from my mining studies, but the colliery manager there or the firm had decided to bore a borehole down to some seams that had never been worked in the Wigan area. What are called the mountain mines, and these were very, very deep mines, but we'd come to a fault in the strata which had thrown these mines nearer the surface, you see, which gave an opportunity to bore. I think we bored a hole about 120 yards down and struck this coal. And much later on, years later on, it was in fact after the war, I remember that they had decided to tunnel down to this particular seam, and I remember working in that seam as an underofficial, shot fire and so on. But I did practically everything. I worked with the contractors, the tunnellers who were tunnelling, what we call tunnelling, you know, went through the rock strata from one seam to another and that sort of thing. I worked on the coal face, even with colliers sometimes on weekends or on the Saturday mornings. I'd go with the collier and help on the coal face. I did packing of the waste down there. I did all sorts of timbering. I did one spell. I was taken back to the bottom of the shaft. And was in charge of sending all the coal to the surface, receiving all the men who came down and keeping a record of the numbers of men who went down the pit, checking up when the shift was finished, that these men we got the correct number of men up and so on. I used to go up after the shift to one of my jobs was to examine the shaft, see that the shaft was there, nothing, that the shaft was safe. Used to ride on top of the cage, up one side of the shaft, come down on the other, examining all the shaft linings and so forth, and that sort of thing. So I did practically everything there was.
Was it hard work down the mine, as a working environment?
Well, yes, of course, I mean, it is hard work, but the people who worked down the mines, I mean, traditionally, I mean, that was their job. And although it was hard work, I mean, they never grumbled about it. I mean, and the conditions varied from seam to seam. But this particular, Western Mines Colliery, I think it was a very, very good colliery. We've got an enlightened management there. And the manager always insisted on good travelling roads, a good 6 foot high and all that sort of thing. And with good roads, ventilation, you had good ventilation. There weren't the constrictions, you know, to holding back the ventilation, wasn't the friction. So we had a very good ventilation. And I remember there was very little gas there that I ever came across in any of the seams at that quarry. And later on I worked in many seams, and we used to go in and take measurements of all sorts of things. But it was a very enlightened quarry.
What about, was it wet at all?
No, it was a pretty dry mine, actually, that was. It was much later on in my career that I came across the wet mines. Well, this one, I think it was because the seams were all overlain by, I think, a lot of clay, you know, in the Wigan area. And I think that prevented the water from getting down through the strata. So it was a fairly dry mine.
You were treated, it seems, almost as an apprentice, being shown, you know, working at a variety of jobs before being... going higher. Were there many people in that position? Would there be many people working as an ordinary miner but sort of starting off in a career in colliery management?
Well, I think the management usually would note if there was anybody interested in that sort of thing. I think they would help them by giving them the chance of moving about there, but I think probably I was a bit exceptional in a way. I don't think I ever realised it at the time, but because I was pushed about, sent to all sorts of jobs, you know, sent with men timbering and sent with contractors, sent on the face. But I had to work hard and on these jobs, and I had to earn my living, you know.
Would many people attend the courses that you did from the mine? Many other ordinary miners?
There weren't very many, no, not a great lot. I mean, there are always a certain number who were keen, you know. The first thing that would interest them would being a what was called a colliery fireman, or a deputy, as they called them in the north. And that was sort of an underofficial who was in charge of a district of the mine and responsible for the safety of the mine and so forth. And there was a very fairly simple examination, actually, for this fireman's examination. And those who were ambitious, generally sort of, they were going for that sort of job.
But you were aiming higher than that?
I was aiming higher, I should think. I was the only one in that colliery who was really studying for the manager's certificate. As I say, I was only 16 when I went to the Saturday afternoon class. It was no easy job, you know. I mean, this was before the 8 Hours Act, you know. And we started work at 6 o'clock in the morning. This meant that I used to leave home before 5:30, and down the pit by 5:40. And the shift went on till about 4 o'clock. Then all the men had to be wound up. So I probably didn't get on till about 4:30.
Would you have any breaks during the day?
Oh yeah, yes. We used to have a break. We used to have 2 half-hours. Before the 8 Hours Act. We used to have a break from 8 to 8:30. I remember this quite well, because when we were at the pit bottom, there were about half a dozen of us, when we used to take a cans of tea, that was the usual thing. The miners used to take a can of liquid, a lot of it was ordinary tea or that sort of thing. And I remember that we at the pit bottom, we used to send our cans up in the morning, well before breakfast time. And they used to put these around the furnace. They used to warm them up somehow. So we used to have this scalding hot tea come down for us for breakfast time, I remember. Then that was from 8 to 8.30, and then we had another break from 12 to 12.30, when everything stopped, all the haulages stopped, and so forth. The men on the faces, I mean, they knew it was time for breakfast, because all the haulages were stopped and there were no tubs coming into the faces. So the colliers used to have their break about the same time. Everybody stopped for about half an hour, and that was it, twice a day. But after the 8 hours act, I mean, there was just one quarter of an hour. That's all we got for a quarter of an hour's break during the day.
What about safety precautions? What were they like? Was there any regulations?
Oh yes. There were some very strict regulations. Even for the main act that I remember was the 1911 Coal Miners Act. I mean, there was a reorganisation and inquiries and so forth, check up, and the old mine regulations were all got together and incorporated into the Coal Miners Act 1911. Oh yes, there were all sorts of safety regulations about the distances for timbering. You know, the men working at the face, they must set the roof supports at minimum distances apart. There must never be too much space between the men working and the face. All sorts of regulations about blasting. And the firemen, they had to test the places for gas before they fired any shots, you know, on the face to bring out down the coal. So there were there were some very strict regulations. Later on, there were coal dust regulations, you know, that there had to be samples of dust taken from off the floor, the roof, and sides. They had to have them analysed and all these things posted up on the pit bank. There had to be more than a certain percentage of combustible matter and all that sort of thing. So there are some very, very strict regulations.
Was it still strict about not allowing matches into the... or light, candles and things?
Oh, yes. I mean, that was one of the jobs of the man at the bottom that I told you about, the job that I was... was known as the onsetter, by the way. The man in charge on the top was the banks man. And he was the man in charge of the arrangements on the top. The man at the bottom was the onsetter, and his job was, I told you, to check the men coming down, the numbers coming down, and so forth, and check out all the amount of coal going up. And now, what were we talking about then?
We're talking about the checking for matches.
Oh, checking. Oh, yes. One, the other job was, he had to search. Every man had to be searched. Is to feel, the usual thing was to feel, you know, around the pockets, in the pockets, and if there's any dirt, he'd put a hand in the pocket. But the main thing was to work, and even like get them to open their breakfast tins, you know, and that sort of thing. So, yes, there was a very, very keen checking of that.
What role did the union play at that time? Would you all be members?
Well, I was a member at one time. I don't think I was a member all the time, but I remember I was a member of the union. I remember going to one union meeting. I think it was one and one only. And as an incentive to get the youths to go there, I think they were given a packet of Woodbines or something, which didn't interest me because I never smoked until the First World War anyway. And the men, I think the men used to get a pint if they went to the union meeting, met at the local pub. That's how the pit. Oh yes, the Czech weighman really was usually the local miners' representative, and he would arrange about the piece prices for piece work, you know, for the colliers and contractors and so forth. And he normally would look after the interests of the men. If there were any complaints, the Czech weighman, he was the union representative. He would see the management for the men and so forth. Oh yes, the union was very strong about the fight.
Were there any disputes while you were there?
Well, there were one or two national strikes, but there were very few local. I don't remember any local disputes. Just that was confined to our college. There were two colleges actually. It was the mains. One was a downcast shaft. That's where the ventilation went down and the other was the upgas shaft, where a fan drew the air up. No, I don't remember any.
What about the national ones you mentioned? Was the colliery in those?
There was a railway strike about 1911 or something, I remember that. And well, we just had to come out, that was it. I know, we took it as a matter of course. I mean, the strike was on, it was an order. And then everybody just came out. It was a national strike. I remember later strikes, of course, much later on, the 1921 and 1926 strikes.
We'll perhaps come to them
later on.